Professor Gerald Horn of the University of Houston is in Washington. Professor Horace Campbell of African American Studies and Political Science at Syracuse University is speaking to us from Syracuse. If you could respond, Professor Campbell, to what Gerald Horn said before the break.
Yes, I want to reiterate the point that any kind of political work we do on Zimbabwe should assist us in educating our people here, so that when the Zimbabwean political leadership represents itself to say that it is being persecuted because it expropriated the land of the former white settlers, we have to interrogate what does the expropriation of the land mean for the millions of Zimbabwean workers, small farmers. It is very clear that the Zimbabwean people needed to reclaim the land from the white settlers. But the Mugabe government, when he was receiving his knighthood from the British government, never negotiated about the land when he was getting his knighthood, because throughout the period from 1980 to 1992, the Zimbabwe had the legal powers to be able to set in motion the possibilities for strengthening the working peoples, the farm workers, the women, the plantation and agricultural workers. And when we speak about land, we must understand that whether the land is owned by white farmers or black farmers, the fundamental productivity on the land emanates from the labor of the working peoples. So our task is, how is it we should defend the working peoples of Zimbabwe, the hundreds of thousands of workers who live under conditions of wretchedness, who have been exploited by the black capitalist farmers who are in the Zimbabwean government, just as the whites have done. So any kind of transition in Zimbabwe must involve strengthening the rights of the workers, the women, and the youth in Zimbabwe. I think that what Gerald has said should throw away all of the talk about Mugabe being against imperialism, because it was very clear that Anglo-American, Barclays Bank, Rio Tinto, and diamond dealers have made billions of dollars while Mugabe was talking about the land. And what we're calling for is for any transitional period in Zimbabwe to be one where there is intervention by the African Union, so that that theft of billions that have been carried out by the clique around the ruling elements in Zimbabwe, that we do not have them carrying out repression of the workers with impunity and then stealing the money as they've done for the past 8 to 10 years.
Gerald Horn, I'd like to ask you, obviously, Mugabe has been an icon and a hero, a giant in terms of the liberation movements in Africa for decades. But your sense now, do you believe that he still represents any forces for progress in Africa, or has he gradually transformed himself into a dictator?
Well, I think that President Mugabe is a force to be reckoned with in Zimbabwe, and I agree with those leaders in the region who feel that he and his party must be contended with if there is to be a settlement of this controversy in Zimbabwe. I should also say that with regard to Professor Campbell, I am here not to carry a brief for ZANU-PF, but they have argued that they did not move on land reform before 1994, i.e. the date of the South African election, so as not to unsettle the situation in neighboring South Africa, which of course has outstanding land claims of its own. We all know that there have been more white farmers killed in South Africa than have been killed in Zimbabwe. And likewise, of course, there are outstanding land claims in neighboring Namibia as well. I think it's understandable why there is a focus on ZANU-PF. After all, it's the ruling party. But standing in the wings is the opposition, the MDC, and sadly and unfortunately, there has not been considerable focus on them, such as their leaders, Roy Bennett, a top leader, a former major landowner in Zimbabwe, who, of course, throttled an African on the floor of the Zimbabwean parliament. I would have thought that that kind of behavior would have ended in independence in 1980. You have other leading Rhodesians in the leadership of MDC. And one of the things that worries many of us is that if MDC does come to power, there will be a split. And quite frankly, they will pave the way for the rise of certain retrograde elements like Roy Bennett to come back into power. In some ways, MDC, a trade union-led movement, is akin to Solidarity in Poland, which, of course, paved the way for the present right-wing leadership in Poland to come to power in Warsaw. So we have to be very careful when we try to butt into the internal affairs of a sovereign state. I think our energies would be better served by putting pressure on this government here in Washington and its comical sidekick in London.
Professor Horace Campbell.
Well, the intellectual subservience of the MDC and the leadership of the MDC is clear to most workers in Southern Africa. But at this point in the history of Zimbabwe, the MDC does not have political power. The social forces that are organized in Zimbabwe against the government have thrown their weight behind the MDC at the present moment. The Women of Zimbabwe Arise. These are independent organizations. PADARI, the workers, the agriculture and plantation workers. And I think we do not have the right to say to the Zimbabwean workers that you are under oppression and therefore we should decide for you, that because of the history of Mugabe's relationship to the liberation movement 28 years ago, then we should be saying to you what your choices should be. In Southern Africa, the Congress of South African Trade Union Movement has called for a blockade of the Zimbabwean government and the Zimbabwean leadership. And the Congress of South African Trade Union, which is the largest trade union movement in Southern Africa, is a movement which is calling for the isolation of the Mugabe government. What we agree with Gerald on is the following, that the land question in Southern Africa is an urgent question in Namibia, in South Africa, and in Zimbabwe. But having said that, we must learn lessons from Zimbabwe to say that when land is being reclaimed, it should not be reclaimed for rich black farmers to replace white farmers. Land, when it is being reclaimed in South Africa or Namibia, should be reclaimed in a condition where there is health and safety conditions for the working peoples. So, yes, we should take lessons from Zimbabwe, and we should introduce new politics in Southern Africa that is coming out of the politics of reconciliation, that no concept of victory should be victory which gives power to one group over another. There should be ways in which the transition towards a new political dispensation in Southern Africa is one that strengthens the producing classes, the workers, the small farmers, students. And these are the forces that have been repressed, brutalized. The trade union leaders that are in jail right now in Zimbabwe should be released. Opposition leaders should be released. Women should be released. Human rights workers should be released, so that, yes, we can criticize the leadership of the MDC, and I have done so in my writing, in my book, Reclaiming Zimbabwe. But the government of Zimbabwe must now arise in a situation where we provide leadership in a condition where 80% of the people are unemployed, where women have been persecuted as prostitutes when they walk on the streets, where homosexuals have been called pigs and dogs, and where men go around trying to have sexual relations with young virgins, saying that this would prevent HIV/AIDS. We need a new political leadership to go against this kind of backwardness that came out of the kind of patriarchal leadership that we had under ZANU-PF for the past 28 years.
We wanted to bring South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu into this. He also came out forcefully against the violence and intimidation in Zimbabwe, speaking in Cape Town Tuesday. He warned Mugabe should bend to international pressure or could risk facing universal sanctions and being brought before an international criminal court.
We are seeing a country not just steadily, but rapidly going down the precipice into chaos. The international community should, I believe, have intervened long ago when some of us appealed for a peacekeeping force to ensure that people were not intimidated, people were not attacked, and that the conditions for a free and fair election would then have been sustained. Now, I think obviously the efforts should continue where we are hoping against hope that good sense might get to prevail and Mr. Mugabe would agree that really his time is up. It's 20 years or more, I mean, that he has been head of state. I think, I mean, that they've got to tell him, you know, that he still has the chance of a reasonably soft landing. But if he continues and everybody decides to brand his administration illegitimate, then he stands a very, very good chance of being arraigned before the ICC for human rights violations.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Gerald Horn, your response both to Archbishop Desmond Tutu and Professor Campbell.
Well, obviously, we have enormous respect for Archbishop Desmond Tutu, but I must return to the question that should occupy us in the North Atlantic, which is why is it that Zimbabwe gets so much focus and attention on this side of the Atlantic when Paul Biya, the leader of Cameroon, a few weeks ago basically makes himself president for life and it barely registers a blip? A similar situation unfolding in Uganda with Yoweri Museveni. I think that part of the reason is not only the race and racism question, but it's also the question that many of the former Rhodesians have kith and kin on this side of the Atlantic. The spouse of Henry Kissinger, the former U.S. Secretary of State, the spouse of Chester Crocker, the former Assistant Secretary of State for Africa under the Reagan administration, even some relatives, distant relatives of George Washington, for whom this city of which I'm sitting is named. Ian Smith, the former Rhodesian leader, of course, had relatives in San Diego. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of white mercenaries from the United States who flocked to Rhodesia in the 1970s and the 1980s to fight against liberation of that particular country. And it befuddles and baffles me why this kind of basic historical background is not integrated into the conversation, integrated into the discourse on Zimbabwe. I think it gives a very bad impression on the African continent, which leads many Africans to consider that there is only focus in the North Atlantic on Zimbabwe because there is a white minority, and that perhaps helps to explain why there has been such a lethargy, perhaps in responding to some of the human rights violations that are unfolding in Zimbabwe. And until that kind of situation is rectified, I dare say that there will continue to be an unsettled situation in Zimbabwe.
Gerald, all that being true, and we clearly recognize that disparity in approach and coverage. Back in 2005, there were massive forced relocations of hundreds of thousands of people by the Mugabe government that really stunned people, even in the progressive community here in the United States, who have supported Mugabe in the past. Your response to those relocations, and again to the issue of whether the government has increasingly become iron-handed and dictatorial in dealing with its own people?
Well, those dislocations were tragic and unfortunate, and I know about them because I hail from St. Louis, Missouri, and of course it used to be said with regard to that city and many other cities that urban renewal meant Negro removal. That kind of situation is not unique to Zimbabwe. In Casamance region of Senegal, as we speak, there have been tens of thousands of Africans who have been displaced because of a civil conflict that stretches back 25 years. It's barely registered a blip on the international press screen. So, yes, those situations that you refer to in Zimbabwe are quite tragic and unfortunate, and they need to be criticized, as well as other analogous situations. And when those analogous situations are not criticized, it basically provides fodder for those who would like to downplay the situation in Zimbabwe.
Professor Horace Campbell, we just have about 30 seconds. Your response and your summary.
My response is that the government of Senegal, the government of Cameroon does not represent itself as a liberation government. The Zimbabwean government is very aware of the racism that exists in North America, and it's exploiting that racism and the anti-racist sentiment among Africans in the West in order to legitimize its repression on the people. The government of Zimbabwe at this moment is illegitimate. We must avoid war at all costs. Mugabe says only God can remove him, and he will go to war. At present, he's at war against the Zimbabwean people, and we must end the silence in the progressive and Pan-African community against this kind of manipulation and repression in the name of liberation.
We leave it there. Professor Horace Campbell of Syracuse University and Professor Gerald Horn of University of Houston, thanks so much for joining us. That's